Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Twas the night before our Christmas Day when Santa sent the threat. Locked down with no vaccine pass. Before the Great Reset. The leader of this panic was known as COVID Claus. Santa's elves were on his naughty list, unvaxxed, unmasked outlaws. So up to the North Pole he went on his Amazon drone machine to test the jolly old Saint Nick for the novel COVID-19. Come here, Santa, take this test. I know that you'll feel better. You don't want me to alert the world that you are a super spreader. Santa turned up positive on his 10th exam. But I passed the first 9 times, he cried. This PCR is a scam. It was too late for poor old Santa Claus. He now had to quarantine. Shackled and under surveillance, this all seemed quite obscene. Now let's go get the reindeer. They must be tested too. When COVID Claus saw Rudolph, off away he flew. Well, at least the elves won't fly away. They're banned from making toys. Going forward, it's just Amazon for all the girls and boys. Then COVID flew around the world, closing down the economy. You're under 5G surveillance. There is nowhere you can flee. The spy cameras that he mounted on every block and home in sight captured everything you say or do, much to Bill Gates' delight. Check out my vaccine machine gun. It's your moral obligation. I'm here to protect you from the viral lab leak causation. And here's a token of my goodwill. It's called cultured meat. It's almost like the real thing, but it smells quite like my feet. Bezos, Gates, and Zuckerberg wired funds from their foundations. You know there was no other way. We are the world's salvation. You've got them all locked up inside, masked, vaxxed, and filled with fear. But it won't be just for COVID. It's forever, each and every year. When people finally caught on to the global conspiracy, they undid all of the Great Reset, setting Santa and all elves free. Everyone got back together, celebrating with great laughter. We have stopped the Great Reset to live happily ever after.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. I agree.
Hey, Merry Christmas, everybody. Welcome to this special episode of SDG 535. Crisis update number 48. Folks, it is a special day, but there's so much news that I still believe that we had to do this message. Otherwise, it's kind of like bread. You know, if you don't use it, it goes stale. So what I'd like to do is just welcome you to the show. And I know you are my brothers and sisters in Christ. Others of you are simply seekers of the truth, but for whoever you are, there's one thing I'm certain that every single American right now shares in common. We all truly want to know the truth about what's going on in this crazy world. So welcome to all of you and Merry Christmas. This is, like I said, crisis update number 48. Now, later in this message, after we cover all the forbidden news that you're never going to hear on the fake news, we're going to continue where we let off last week concerning God's plan to give you power. You know, power to the weak and strength to the powerless. You know, the Bible says in Psalm 29:11 that the Lord gives strength to his people and blesses his people with peace. So I hope you stay tuned on this Christmas edition of SDG, Crisis Update, so we can learn how to soar like an eagle in this war on truth. But the bottom line, folks, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. We're just God's people passing through. Praise the Lord. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity. And stay tuned to find out the latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you. But remember, folks, how did it start? Well, it all started with lab engineered. Yeah, we know it's lab engineered now. Media manipulated coronavirus heist. And as always, folks, let's look at something we talked about last week. You know, last week we heard from the World Economic Forum's sister group, the Forum for the Future, when we played that clip called Mega Cities on the Moon, Plandopolis. And it's out on YouTube if you want to see it. I'm not going to play it again today, but what I'd like to do, folks, is just remind you that we are being softened up before they move for the Great Reset. Then we looked at a clip from the Truth Stream Media, and it focused on something that one of the Forum of Young Global Leaders, Ida Aukin, had to say. She tried to convince us that one day, very soon, we'll own nothing and be happy. But then right after the show, I was just going through my emails and I stumbled on, I think it was from Sister Kathy, a clip titled Agenda 2030 and the War on the Car. And it follows along exactly with what we're talking about. So what I'd like to do before we get into the freaky deaky news, have you listen to this. Agenda 2030 and War on the Car. Now, it's almost 8 minutes long, but it's full of information. Take a listen to this. This is some freedom fighter. Sounds like he's over in the United Kingdom, perhaps Scotland or Ireland. I suspect Ireland. But listen to the truth that this man speaks.
Today, we're going to talk about one of the main driving forces behind this COVID scamdemic, the scam behind the scam, if you will, UN Agenda 21 and the landmark year that we will reach at the end of this decade, 2030. 2030 Sustainable Development Goals. I've already covered this topic several times, but I'd like to expand upon this once again and comment on how we're seeing more of this agenda being pushed forward politically and in terms of the media's narrative building. I've also previously discussed how there's a major deindustrial component about this nefarious plan, from the abolition of certain building materials, the banning of most fossil fuels, the phasing out of commercial passenger air travel for most people, the move towards a circular economy, and the banning of most meat farming in favor of lab-grown meat. Throw in the Great Reset, and you can add on digital currencies, programmable money, a social credit system, and the abolition of private property rights. By 2030, you're expected to own nothing and somehow be happy about it. One of the big changes the globalists want to make to our lives is weaning us off owning our own cars. The cars of the future will be essentially self-driving taxis for hire, and they will be designed to only take us to certain permitted destinations within human habitat zones of towns, suburbs, and smart cities. Certain rural areas can be placed off limits to us because they will be considered areas of ecological preservation or areas that need to recover from man-made climate change or whatever. So how do they get us to eventually give up our cars? Well, there's a few strategies that they can employ, and all of them will be done incrementally over several years. The obvious ones would be things like increasing our road taxes, vehicle registration tax, new carbon levies, insurance hikes, and of course, significant increases to petrol and diesel prices, which are already well underway this year, you may have noticed, at the petrol pumps. But there are other means of coercing people into giving up their cars. I'm going to get to that in a moment, but first I want to comment on this article from the Irish Examiner. Public may be urged to film reckless motorists under new RSA strategy. I guess it was fortuitous that COVID managed to normalize a culture of snitching and curtain twitching. Speed limits of 30 kilometers per hour countrywide could be implemented in all urban areas as part of an ambitious new strategy to reduce road deaths. 30 kilometers per hour. That's an absolute joke, and seems more designed to cripple the motor car as a form of transport. Motorists could also be encouraged to upload footage of road traffic offences to assist in prosecutions, while there will also be ambitious steps to reduce the number of learner drivers on the roads in the coming years. Their proposals are part of a series of changes mapped out under the new strategy published by the Road Safety Authority, which targets a 50% reduction in road deaths by 2030 and the elimination of all road deaths by 2050. This is just insane. We're truly living in an era of ridiculous levels of safism, where we're supposed to live in a world that is entirely free of any risk at this point. It's like we're supposed to be just completely risk-averse. People are willing to sacrifice their freedom for supposed safety and security. Now, the kind of pushback that someone like me gets when I say these kinds of things is, well, what's wrong with trying to prevent unnecessary road deaths? Are you saying we should just let people die? Have you no heart? What if you lost someone in a car accident? I bet you wouldn't be saying that then. Should we get rid of seatbelts and passenger airbags next, huh? This kind of emotional blackmail bullshit. There is obviously a fine line between pursuing reasonable safety levels and then going overboard to pursue safety at all costs, to the point where the population is basically wrapped in bureaucratic bubble wrap. People die from drowning when swimming in the sea. So should we restrict the number of people who are allowed to access beaches so that we reduce the number of deaths by drowning every year? People die or have serious accidents when skiing. So should we reduce the number of people allowed to access ski slopes, for example? Imagine what would need to be done in order to achieve zero road deaths by 2050. How would you even go about something like that? I suppose it might help if there were, say, no more human-driven vehicles anymore. After all, human beings get tired, they make mistakes, they get angry behind the wheel of a car, or they sometimes drive drunk. An autonomous vehicle doesn't do any of those things. And who knows, maybe by 2050 there could be a lot less people on the planet. I mean, that could help to reduce the number of road deaths further, wouldn't it? Less people means less people dying on the roads, I guess. Furthermore, there are other means of dissuading the general public from wanting to own a car, like adding more tolls on the road and replacing car lanes with more bus and taxi corridors. I don't believe our governments and the globalists who control them really care about the health and welfare of humanity. Do you? I think they want to curb car ownership because, just like home ownership, this is a conversation about freedom. And of course, they will use all kinds of arguments about public safety or the environment in order to justify the onerous rules and restrictions that they place on motorists. Over the past 20 months, the COVID scam has shown us that far too many people in our society are way too comfortable with the government being able to decide what risks that they're allowed to take in their lives and what choices they can make with their own bodies. The big brother of government is more of a mother and father figure to the masses, a parent that's always looking out for them. In the quest to keep everyone safe from death at all costs, a people can never truly be free to actually live. Life carries with it risk, and although there are always things people can do to reduce unnecessary risks in their day-to-day lives, and there does need to be legal penalties for those who deliberately or unnecessarily endanger or harm others, nothing good ever comes from allowing the government to micromanage us, and they will be only too happy to do this so long as we allow them. Governments know that they can hoodwink the public into surrendering their rights and freedoms by claiming that they're introducing new laws or regulations with a view towards making people more safe. The problem is that these policies are deliberately taken too far, and anyone who opposes them in the name of preserving individual rights and freedoms will quickly be shut down with self-righteous or hysterical arguments about how they don't care about people's well-being. We saw this happen to people who argued against lockdowns, face masks, and now mandatory jabs. Nanny state restrictions of any kind can result in reduced personal autonomy and freedom for the individual and much more power for the state. In a time of tyranny, this result is precisely what motivates governments to introduce the laws in the first place. The problem, as history has shown us numerous times, is that rights and freedoms taken by governments are never willingly handed back.
And all I can say to that is one big amen, brother. You know, folks, this idea of safety at all costs, it's a ruse. It really is, folks. Ben Franklin, when asked during the Constitutional Convention, "Sir, what have you wrought?" Some woman stopped him on the street. Well, Ben Franklin, a very wise man, and a little bit more on Ben after this comment, okay, he said to that woman, a republic, if we the people are willing to sacrifice a little of our freedom for safety, soon we'll have neither. And I didn't say that. Ben Franklin did. Now, he was a member of the Hellfire Club. And if you don't know what that is, I talked about it on past shows, but maybe we could do something in the future on the Hellfire Club. So as I take my notes, just write Hellfire Club, future episode, maybe a Back to the Future. What I want to get here is this thing called lesser magic. And what lesser magic is this process that these demented Satanists do to justify their actions, and that is that they disclose everything they plan to do before they do it. So when Ben Franklin made that comment that if you're willing to sacrifice a little bit of your freedom for some safety, what he was doing was casting a spell upon the American people. And look at it. Wind the clock ahead 200 plus years. Where are we at? Spellcasting is another topic. The English language is perhaps the best language in the world to spellcast. But more on that later. We have to keep moving. Folks, I just want to say that money is the most powerful persuader to those who love it. You know, the Bible did say, for the love of money is the root of all evil. You know, remember, we're so sophisticated today, and I've covered shows on this, that we don't have idolatry or worship of idols anymore. But mammon worship, you know, the god of money, Mammon, it's our secular religion today. It's a form of idolatry. Now, you can put the veneer of Christian behind your name, or Muslim, or Jew, or even some of the Eastern religions like Hindu, whatever. You can put any religious covering you want on it. But if you're driven by that rather than a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, it's a form of idolatry. All governments operate exactly the same way. Now, just government was intended to maintain protection of its people, their lives, you know, their liberty, and their pursuit of happiness. But when a government moves from that mandate vested in them by the consent of the governed, and when it moves to control legal personalities, it's fascism. That's a de facto government that does not govern by righteousness, but rather by might. And that's why property is so important, folks. To be free, you've got to own stuff. You know, in this land of the free and home of the brave, you ain't going to be free very long if you're not brave and if you're not willing to stand up and speak out and say no more. You know, you got to own stuff. You really do. Your land, your home, your cars, your trucks, your tractors, and yes, folks, even your children. And if you do not identify your children until they're of legal age as your property, that's why you can have CYS and all these government entities coming in and telling you, hey, we're going to take your children because you didn't vax them. Hey, we're going to take your children because you don't force them to wear a face diaper, whatever. The point I'm trying to make is that if we lose property, which they're trying to do through this great reset, we lose all legal rights. Folks, we've got to grow up and quit relying on mummy church, the Jezebel, so to speak, and daddy state, the Ahab, and we have got to take responsibility. Leave the childhood of personhood behind and become a grown-up living man, woman, / soul. Please, folks, do it again. That's the first step in becoming born again. I'm telling you, it's all about money. Money to the person, and that's how the powers to the be control the entire person in their eyes is no different, whether it's a building with bricks and mortar and a name on it like Amazon, or you and me. Look at your driver's license. Look at the mail that comes to you from these government entities. All your letters in your name are capitalized. And you know why that is, folks? That's because you're a straw man. It's Mortmain with Dead Hand. You're no different in their eyes than a corporation. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10 says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil, folks." And Matthew 6, 24, "No one can serve two masters. Either he'll hate one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other." You cannot serve both God and money, folks. Jesus said that. So remember, property brings sovereignty. Property enables common law, natural law. And without property, you're vassals of the state. Folks, the love of money is the root of all evil. And I'm telling you, this has been decades in the making. Wind it back to 1913. It had several phases it had to go through. So right now, this time, Congress got together when everybody in Congress, except for these evildoers, were still in Washington, and they created the creature from Jekyll Island, the Federal Reserve. And then from about 1914 to the Great Depression, they were in their formative stage. And then from the Great Depression to Bretton Woods, they were starting to tighten their control through a lot of the legislation. And then from Bretton Woods to Nixon after World War II, there was the great rebuild. They had to build our infrastructure to create the control grid they needed. That was the highway systems, electrification of America, which brought us internet eventually. All these things. By the way, as you've seen this modernization of America, we've had our quote-unquote pandemics correlated. It matches directly to every advance we've had in electromagnetic technology. You know, cell phones, telegraph, phone lines, power lines, now the cell phone towers. Yes, folks, it correlates. Got off track there. So then in the early 70s, Nixon revokes the gold standard, and we go on to the petrodollar, and that lasts till about the Clinton administration when he struck down the Glass-Steagall Act, and he allowed commercial and investment bankers to merge. So now you've got Wall Street and Main Street sleeping in bed together. And now your money comes mingled with all of their derivatives and all of their speculation and all of their games. Now go from 9/11 to 2008 and the TARP bailout. That's how to switch, or I should say transfer, all the wealth around the world. And then from the TARP to the scamdemic, because now we're primed, locked and loaded, and ready for the Great Reset. Circles and circles, folks. That's how they do this control. At the very center, you have the prince of this world, Lucifer himself, meeting with the Council of Nine, who know what this is all about. This is to establish the seat of the Antichrist and to defeat the Lord Jesus Christ. But we know how it ends, folks. And then around this Council of Nine, you have the 1%. You know, the 14 blue blood families with Rh negative blood, descendants of the fallen angels. And then around them, folks, you have all the administrators, the graduates of the young global leaders, Klaus Schwab's minion. And then around that, you have the bureaucrats, the career bureaucrats that are there all the time, regardless of the administrations across the world. And then around them, you have the gullible masses, the goyim. And around them, or outside of this whole circle upon circles, you have the awakened, the red-pilled, the people that have spiritual sight and spiritual light to see. And that's what we have. Now, what they're trying to take us to is what's known as this world where we'll own nothing and be happy. They want to put us in these little cubes like we saw in the Black Mirror episode that I played the classic clip from, Season 1, Episode 3, 15 million credits. You'll do mundane tasks all day long, contemplate the fuzz in your navel, whatever. And the point I'm trying to make here, folks, is that at the end of the day, you go back to your other cube, and you're just assaulted with brainwashing media information nonstop. But listen to how Facebook's Zuckerberg is trying to sell us on the quote-unquote experience of the metaverse.
Now, the best way to understand the metaverse is to experience it yourself. How we actually experience the world and interact with each other.
Experience the world.
Experience. Experiences. You're going to be able to move across these different experiences
in the experience.
You're going to be in these experiences. many of the most immersive experiences, just a fundamentally different experience, you can start to see how the metaverse is going to enable richer experiences and really bring them into these shared experiences. Now, there's a lot that needs to get built to create experiences like this. New experiences that you're having to a completely different set of experiences in the metaverse. Different kinds of metaverse experiences, the most important experience of all, experiences.
I hope you got that. So it's all about the experience, folks. It's not about the sweat of your brow. It's not about taking your labor and applying it to substance to become wealthy. And that's how wealth is created, folks. You have to mine it. You have to dig it out of the ground. You have to grow it or chop it down out of the woods. And then you have to get these things that you've grown or mined, and you have to manufacture stuff, make stuff with them. That's the application of labor and substance, the only way to create true wealth. But you know what, folks? Just stay in your cubicle because it's all for the greater good.
We need you to stay in your home for a couple weeks. It's for the greater good. We need you to close your business just for a short time. It's for the greater good. We need you to stay home just a little bit longer than 2 weeks. It's for the greater good. We need you to wear this on your face. It's for the greater good. We need you to wear two of these on your face. It's for the greater good. We need you to inject this into your body. It's for the greater good. We need you to spend the holidays alone. It's for the greater good. You must inject this into your body if you want to feed your family. It's for the greater good. We need you to stop eating that. It's not good for the environment. It's for the greater good. We need you to stop driving your car and flying. It's for the greater good. We need you to stop heating your home so often. It's for the greater good. We need you to stop saying that. It's hurting some people's feelings. This is for the greater good. We need you to stop having children. It's not good for the planet. This is for the greater good. We need you to stop talking about your faith. It's offending people. This is for the greater good. We need to separate you from your children because you're not complying. This is for the greater good. We need to hold you in a facility for a little while for not cooperating. This is for the greater good. 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 This is for the...
My government wants what's best for me. My government knows what's best for me. My government wants what's best for me.
Wake up, America. We're being scammed. It's the biggest scam in the world. The greatest wealth transfer in all of modern times. Folks, we'll be reduced to the feudal serfs. We'll be reduced to the slaves of Pharaoh Egypt. And I'm warning you, wake up, folks. If this is truly the land of the free, then you've got to be brave. Stand up. Do not comply. Peacefully resist and tell them no more. But right now, folks, we have to get started with Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, folks, let's get started with the coronavirus heist.
The coronavirus, COVID-19, pandemic, the coronavirus heist, it's a scamdemic. They call it the great equalizer. And say we're all in this together, except for the bankers, politicians, and powers to be. And folks, that ain't either you or me. So let's all wake up to the coronavirus heist and just say they know all their lies and mind control. The coronavirus, COVID-19.
Just say no. Just say no. I can't say it any clearer than that, folks. I had a clip queued up and I forgot to download it. It was from Mercola's site. He was interviewing a woman, a PhD, a research fellow at the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. This is in Israel. Her name is Jessica Rose. And she's taken a deep dive into the U.S. VAERS reporting system, you know, the adverse events reporting system. And in this interview that I want to share with you, she gets into the details. Now, unfortunately, I don't have it, so I can't share it with you. And it's because what Dr. McCullough is doing, and I blame him, he's had death threats against his family. Post this information, it's up for about 24 hours, maybe 36, and then it comes down. And I couldn't get it. It was very good. So if you can find anything out there, Jessica Rose, she gets into the details. And really, when you find out what's happening here, and this kind of correlates with what this study by Boston College back in the 2012 range had to say about the VAERS system. They said that a very small percentage of the actual adverse events are truly reported. Now, I think Jessica's done a little bit more study into this, and there's some other studies that kind of corroborate what she's saying, but it's somewhere between 40 to 44 times a multiplier. So if they say there's 10,000 deaths, there's somewhere between 40 to 44,000 deaths. Now, I think VAERS is up to around 25,000 now. With a multiplier of 40, let's be conservative, we're at 1 million vaccine-related deaths now. Now, last night on CBS, I was at my sister's for Christmas Eve, and maybe a little bit more on that a bit later, but they had the TV on. It was on CBS, and they were giving a moronic case update, you know, on the new outbreak. I meant to say Omicron, not moronic. I'm sorry. But they're saying cases are up 45%. There must be a truther there tonight. All the regular staff must be at home, because then right after that little subtitle, the next one came up, hospitalizations up 1%. But let's not forget about the 5G EMF radiation sickness correlation. I've talked about that from day one. Look at where they were turning on Wi-Fi hotspots with the 5G technology. Look at where they were beta testing this. Wuhan, with the Chinese 5G technology, which actually puts out some significant multiple of what the FCC deems safe. Now, folks, is any electromagnetic radiation truly safe? You can study some about the Spanish flu, and like I said earlier in the show, look at time there was a major advance in anything involving electricity. Our society had some sort of epidemic or pandemic. So let's listen to what Dr. Lee Merritt has to say about COVID and its relationship to 5G EMF radiation. This is a 4-minute and 24-second clip.
I'm starting to see people that are younger people that are getting sick with something, okay? But if you look at what we know about, for example, electromagnetic frequency toxicity, it's indistinguishable from COVID, from what they call COVID. The idea is we don't have an isolate of the virus. We're being told there's a virus. We're being told it's airborne. We're being told a lot of things that are not proven. But we do know something about electromagnetic frequency and the history behind the pandemic of 1918, various flu pandemics in the past. What happens is when you're in an electromagnetic field, your metabolism depends on your being able to have an electron transport chain in your mitochondria. The mitochondria are the little parts of your cells that they're like your furnaces. They're what produce power from food. And when you disrupt that electron chain ever so slightly, you disrupt your ability to optimally metabolize food. And that's essentially what happens if you're toxic from radiofrequency radiation, non-ionizing radiation. Now, it's interesting that when you go back to and I have my family is filled with electrical engineers, and they all think I'm a little nuts because they're working in the macro environment. But it's true that we're dealing with microcurrents and nano, you know, very, very small currents that are going through that are causing this. It doesn't take a lot. In 1918, that's very interesting. I mentioned earlier, they never proved transmission of flu. They tried, they did even things like taking, and I apologize the term snot, but that's not a technical medical term, but you know what it is. The goobers from your nose and your lungs, and they put it into healthy people. They couldn't get them sick. They also literally spun that stuff down, tried to purify it, essentially make it so if there were a small particle in there, it'd be concentrated, and injected it into volunteers, and they didn't get the flu. Horses came down with this, but they couldn't transmit it from horse to horse. So what was going on? Well, it's interesting that we call it the Spanish flu. Why do we do that? Because it didn't start in Spain. It started in Fort Riley, Kansas. And what was happening there? Well, we were training a group of Army guys to go overseas, and among those were telegraphers, the people that are learning to do Morse code. And it was the first time that humans were really around interrupted electrical signals, alternating currents. And what happened is even before that, we called it telegrapher's disease. Telegram operators, as soon as the lines went up, started getting sick. Not necessarily dying, but they were getting sick around the world. And so in 1918, four things came together. We had the telegraphers being trained in Fort Riley, Kansas. It's the first time that we gave our military a battery of vaccines before they went overseas. We had a drug that was being given inappropriately. It was called aspirin. And the Bayer at aspirin had lost their patent and were convincing doctors through the AMA to use it whenever there was a fever. And we have a lot of these memory books from 1918 that show doctors just pushing handfuls of aspirin into these young recruits that were sick with the so-called flu. Well, ultimately, we sent out a pathologist, William Welch from the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, who did autopsies on these people in 1918, and what he found was bloody lungs, that they were bleeding into their lungs. Again, inflammation and aspirin overdose explain some of this. A lot of people died. You know, most people don't realize that before the telegram lines were laid, we didn't have seasonal influenza. Influenza was something that had a worldwide outburst. Influenza comes from the word to influence. Nobody knew what it was from, but they knew that periodically back into the 1500s and 1700s, there'd be an outbreak all around the world, and then it would be absent for decades, and then it would happen again. I think the 5G is part of the end game. I think that they're distracting us with all the everything else.
This whole concept of germ theory, let me give you a little bit on that before we move on, okay? Germ theory started with bacteriology. Now, these bacteria, they're 1,000 times larger than these mysterious viruses, okay? So now let's talk a little bit about how viruses got into quote-unquote germ theory. And the concept of a germ, which was a bacterium, kind of morphed into the concept of all these little microscopic critters, okay? So now we have a virus, which a scientist, and I don't have all of this on the top of my head, I'm just winging this right now, folks, but you have a virus that this scientist found on a tobacco plant, and this entire discipline known as virology sprung into existence, kind of paralleling the discipline of bacteriology, okay? Now, virology truly is to bacteriology what scientism is to science, or what a PhD in sociology or epidemiology, in fact, even epidemiology, which is just an offshoot of sociology. So you get a PhD in epidemiology or sociology, and you're referred to as Dr. So-and-so. Well, the veracity of that doctorate is about the same as the veracity of virology to bacteria. The difficulty or the technology and the science and the education you have to get to receive a PhD in chemistry like I did, or physics, which I technically minored in, or even biology. So where I'm going with this is, folks, this whole aura we have around the invisible enemy, the China virus, is some pretty sloppy science. An entirely different way to explain the shedding of these particles from organisms. And it's called terrain theory. And maybe we'll do a topic on terrain theory. I hope you folks have grown to know me well enough over the years that I'm technically capable, technically competent, and I don't care what the discipline is. You give me a little bit of time, and you give me a resource base of literature, and I can talk competently on any subject. Folks, I'm classically trained as a physical chemist with spectroscopy, primarily Raman spectroscopy, and the adsorption of these macromolecules on silver and gold surfaces, and then we do things with laser beams to study the scattering of that light. It's known as Raman spectroscopy. But I just wanted to tell you that's kind of what I did my PhD on. But then I was picked up by PPG Industries, and I went into the product development group, and I started to formulate to put coatings on fiberglass to compatibilize it with different resins in composites. Now, stay with me because there's a reason for this. Now, how did I make that transition from Raman spectroscopy and the adsorption of macromolecules on gold and silver surfaces to coatings on fiberglass? Well, I studied to show myself approved. I just sat down and read all the patent literature in the industry, and I became one of the top three producers in the reinforcements group for PPG fiberglass. And then back in 1999, me and two other guys started our own company, and I continued to do that there. And then when the need arose, I went into furnace technology and ceramics and all the things we needed to do to melt our glass because somebody had to do it. And how did I learn there? I just learned. The reason I'm telling you all this, folks, is I've applied that same discipline. What I learned when I was in a hard science known as chemistry and physics to get my doctorate, I applied those same methods of learning, those same methods of surveying the literature, going over thousands, yes, literally thousands of published papers to glean the information necessary to draw conclusions, to establish some of the methodologies involved in the scientific method. And that's the same discipline I'm applying now when I talk to you about these matters on these podcasts. So I'm not saying I'm expert on any of these things, not in a practical way, but in a theoretical way. I can hold my own with any of these people, folks. So yes, I can talk to a cardiologist, and I can understand the heart function. Now, I'm not going to pretend that I can do open heart surgery, because I can't, but I understand the theory. And I can apply that because of what the Lord blessed me with. And I'm not boasting. I'm just trying to give you a little bit of my credentials on why I'm comfortable saying the things I say here. But right now, folks, we have to move on because I'm looking at the clock and I am running out of time. It's time for our Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater. The gentleman, Ka means salt, boo means dance. He means skill from the verb. Kabu means to slam or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flatten the curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad, must go. Good is bad, bad is good. Up is down, light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for agenda 2030. And the new world will just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Yes, just say no. Folks, I put that Kabuki Theater rap song out well over a year ago. In fact, right after the one that went viral, thanks to Dr. Terry Tenpenny, you know, the coronavirus heist rap. That's until Twitter responded, it was going on a geometric curve, so to speak, and it was up to 27 or 28,000 views on Twitter when they came in and kind of shut me down. But anyways, you know that opening we had with that Another COVID Christmas? That was a nice little ditty. And then right after it, I played a clip where you heard somebody wishing President Biden Merry Christmas. And then he said, let's go, Brandon. And then we heard Biden say, let's go, Brandon. Well, what I'd like to do is play the clip that's gone all over the Internet now. I think within the first hour up, it had 70,000 retweets on Twitter. And then Twitter kicked their control grid into motion and opened up the memory hole. But take a listen to this full clip. And this was during the call-in on Christmas Eve at the White House where the NORAD operators were calling in and reporting on the location of Santa Claus. But listen to this. This is the full clip. It's 14 seconds.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a wonderful Christmas as well.
Merry
Christmas, and let's go Brandon.
Let's go Brandon, I agree. Hey, by the way, where are you in Oregon?
So what happened here?
Where's your home?
A little bit of background, if you haven't heard it yet, folks, is this caller, his name is Jeremy, he called in, and he managed to get that out on national television. What I played for you was the White House clip that is now all over, is never going to be shoved down the memory hole. So if you have it, retweet it. If you have it, share it. This is a resistance, folks. This is what Gandhi taught about. This is what Martin Luther King taught about. This isn't about the red versus the blues. This isn't about the Democrats versus the Republicans, the vax versus the unvax. No, it's about we the people, 330 million strong, against the 1%. And we need to understand that they have a very dark plan for us where they're going to take everything we own. They're going to literally steal it from us, folks, by legal maneuvering and by manipulation of this money system before it crashes. So the real story here is that this man got this out, and then it went viral. He actually has it up on his YouTube channel, and I checked it this morning, and it's up to 65 or 75,000 views already. And then it went on Twitter, and then Twitter kicked into gear when it was just approaching about 70,000 retweets, I believe it was. And now if you type in "Let's Go Brandon," it doesn't even come up on the hashtag. You get "Let's Go Buffalo Bills," "Let's Go some other football team," and that's about it. So pray for this man. His name is Jared. He's got the spirit of freedom in him, folks, but he stuck his neck out there now. Protection of this man named Jared and his family. He's a young dad, and he's probably already on the no-fly list. He's probably queued up by the IRS for an audit, and I bet you he may even be scheduled for one of those famous early morning FBI raids, you know, the dynamic entry where they smash your door down. They won't even knock on it and ask you to answer it. The demons in the fake mainstream media news, I just predict they're going to have a field day with this today. And I bet you a lot of these libtards are even going to dox him. So please pray for Jared, okay? But right now, folks, it's time for our coop talk with Henrietta. Now, Henrietta, this is a very special coop talk. Where are you? And if you're good, Henrietta, where are you at, Henrietta? There she is. Oh, okay, Henrietta, stay on the paper. Stay on the paper. And if you're good, I'll even give you a smoothie. Now, folks, what I'd like to talk to you about today is another essential part of survival, in difficult times. And that involves a healthy body. And a healthy body begins with a healthy immune system. And one of the ways to boost our immune systems is by the regular consumption of what's known as superfoods. Now, you may have heard of superfoods, okay? Most foods can be categorized as one of the three primary macro food groups, carbohydrates, protein. And within that, there's good proteins and not so good proteins, you know, some that are soy derived. There are good carbs and there are bad carbs. And you can relate that to glycemic index. And then in terms of the realm of fat, there are good fats and bad fats. And that typically or traditionally involves its degree of saturation. But I don't want to get off on that because that's pretty much well established out there. What I'd like to share with you is something that Terry and I have been doing, and we're actually going to amp it up a bit here. And many of these supplements, Terry has been consuming twice daily since her epic battle back in 2018 with colorectal cancer. And folks, I have an entire testimony on that after she was declared in 10 months of disease-free. No evidence of disease. The tumor literally disappeared without surgery. Late stage 3 colorectal cancer, and praise the Lord, by the grace of God and all of the wonderful things he provided for us in creation, which include these things I'm going to share with you today. Terry defeated cancer, and I don't say that smugly. I don't say that with any degree of pride. I say that in the utmost humility on my knees before our Creator God. I thank him and I praise him for this. But get out your pen and paper, folks. I'm going to share a list with you of our favorite daily superfoods. And what I think we're going to gear up and start these into a smoothie, because right now we're taking capsules, and I'll have to post a picture of our vitamin dish in the morning. There's literally 75 of these things in there, and it's just getting a little crazy having to take all these supplements. I have a capsule maker, and I actually buy these things from Bulk Supplements, and I load these little capsules up. But, boy, this is getting crazy. But here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to share 10 or 11 of our favorite superfoods. The first one is chlorella. It's literally derived from algae. Yes, algae. You know, the green stuff on your aquarium or fishbowl when you were a child or still a child like me. I still have aquariums, folks. I love them. And that's that green that you see growing on the glass. Well, it's been used to treat many things. And basically what it's drawing on there is chlorophyll and some of the other phytonutrients that are found in algae. But it can help asthma, fibromyalgia, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, even bad breath, folks. If you have PMS, it can help you. And it even helps neutralize or offset some of the effects of certain STDs. Now, some people even take it to boost their energy level, detox, and improve mental function. So there's a lot of value to chlorella. Then another one is moringa. Now, this can help people manage their blood sugar levels, protect their eyes, improve cardiovascular health, bone health. It helps speed up the healing of wounds. And Terry was taking that, and we were using the medical marijuana and CBD. And I believe all these things were working synergistically. Sloan Kettering actually has a index out there of all these things. And believe it or not, this big cancer machine in the industry, so to speak. Sloan Kettering is one of the top hospitals for cancer research, but they actually have a very good PDF file. And if you can't find it and you're interested, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com and I'll get you a copy. But this moringa is very good for the healing of wounds and skin health. It also has antibacterial and antifungal properties. Now, another one is spirulina. It's related to the chlorella. It's another type of algae. And there's even one that's amped up super high, and I understand it's proprietary, and I'm looking for it, but it's called blue spirulina. And it has this chemical in it, this phytonutrient, this naturally occurring chemical. You know, everything that we are involved with in this world are chemicals, so when you hear the word chemical, don't cringe. It matters of whether it's synthetic or naturally derived. But it's this Arthrospira plantensis. And what it does is it creates this nutrient-dense superfood, which is so powerful because of these blue pigments in it that are called thiocyanins or PCs. And you don't see it in normal spirulina that we've been using, but I'm going to be looking for this blue. So it offers all sorts of benefits. It's packed full of enzymes and minerals and essential amino acids, and it's rich in antioxidants, and it has an anti-inflammatory type of property, and it can even promote overall well-being and brain health. Another one's mint. Yes, just the mint. It grows like a weed where we live, but it has all sorts of anti-inflammatory properties. It's similar in its effect on your body to ibuprofen with none of the deleterious effects on your liver. So it can help you with anything from a toothache to a backache and even PMS. It's packed full of minerals, vitamin C, chromium, and all sorts of other phytonutrients that help things as diverse as diabetes to cavities. Yes, cavities in your mouth. And then the next one, maca tea, folks. Now, unlike most teas, what they do is they grind up the entire tea leaf. Very fine, extremely fine. It almost looks like the powder of a wheatgrass powder. Now, the secret behind maca tea comes from what's known as polyphenol that's in it. And these polyphenol-type compounds, catechins they're called, okay? They're these very unique antioxidants found in green tea, cacao, even apples. And then let's move on. Wheatgrass gives you a high dose of chlorophyll, does all sorts of things. I mean, there's 20 or more benefits to wheatgrass. It'll help regulate your metabolism, balance your hormone, detox heavy metals. That's an important one right now, folks. Helps with blood sugar regulation, digestion, or reduces inflammation. The list goes on and on. Another important one, ashwagandha. Okay, this is an ancient medicinal herb from the the area of India and Pakistan. It has all sorts of health benefits for both your body and your brain. It can boost brain function, lower blood sugar and cortisol levels. Plus, it also helps fight anxiety and depression. Then there's turmeric. Now, personally, I like curcumin, which is the standardized extract of the functional element within turmeric, so you don't have to use as much. But be careful. It's a very potent dye. It has a yellow-orange-type color to it, and it helps with inflammation, and it's even been shown to fight certain cancers. And there's a study of a Brazilian woman that had an inoperable colorectal tumor. So she was basically told to go home and die. Grams of curcumin standardized 95% extract with the pepper extract, which is very essential, so that you get the synergistic effect and the absorptivity. But that's a whole other discussion. And this woman went into remission. Well, Terry's been taking, when she was fighting cancer, she was taking 8 grams a day. She's been reduced down to 4 grams a day on a maintenance level. But it's a very powerful anti-inflammatory, and it has anti-cancer properties. Plus, there's all sorts of other benefits. Now, another one, a simple superfood, is lemon. Not lemon juice that's packaged in bottles, fresh lemon. It has all sorts of benefits. And I'm looking at the clock here, folks, and I have a lot to cover, so I'm not going to get into all the benefits of lemons. But, yes, lemon is a superfood, as are beets. Yeah, the things your mom used to want you to eat, beets, they're loaded with betadine and these folates. They help lower blood pressure. They reduce your homocysteine level. That's very important because high levels of homocysteine can lead to heart disease. And they also help battle inflammation. And there's another one. If you need some sweetener, monk fruit, a very good source of sweetness. Now, what makes monk fruit so sweet are these things called mogricides. Okay, but there's no calories or carbs in this type of sweet molecule. Now, there's other benefits to monk fruit, not just sweetening. It has antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. Mogricides, what they do is they reduce your oxidative stress level, and they counteract the free radicals, and they minimize or prevent the damage that free radicals do to your cellular tissue. So it's a very, very good superfood. So those were about 10 or 11. I didn't really count them, and I just was listing them out. And you can go to different places. They'll have this powder prepared. But I like to go to bulksupplements.com. And I'm not giving them a post. I'm not doing anything. I'm just telling you the quality of the material there and the bioacids they do in terms of the heavy metal contaminations and the other contaminations. Very good. Also, I think Mike Adams might have some of this over at Health Ranger, but you can find different places. And if this is something you're interested in, let me know, and I'll get you some more information on what we do. But I think we're, like I said, I think we're going to start making smoothies out of them because we've been putting them in capsules, and literally we have between all the vitamins and what have you, Terry and I take about 75 or 80 supplement capsules a day, and it's getting a little out of hand. So I can take a lot of them and put them into a smoothie and drink it on the way to work. But right now, folks, it's time for our Hopium Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium. Sorry, I had my mic off. I don't know if you heard this, but things seem to be shifting. I told you about what I saw last night on the CBS ticker. COVID cases up 45%, and then right after it, hospitalizations up 1%. So where's the news here? Do we report on the common cold? Oh, time for the bowel movement report. And I don't want to sound gross or graphic here, but the reason I bring that up is, did you hear about the new toilets they have out? They're going to analyze our bowel movements and our urine and tell us whether we're healthy or not. This stuff is insane, folks. You know, you won't own your toilet. You'll just rent it. And they have this biosensor in it. It's crazy. Did you hear what they're doing in Australia right now? They're analyzing the sewage sludge, and if they see a certain level of COVID in it. They're locking down the entire community. So I think there's pushback now. So what I'd like to do for you is play this 1 minute and 7 second clip. This is Great Britain's health minister, Gillian Keegan. Now, I checked to see if she was a graduate of the Young Global Leaders. I didn't see her name on there, but her talking points are right out of the Klaus Schwab School of Deception. So listen to this interview with the Sky TV reporter, and there's pushback from that reporter. This is what I want you to hear. Listen to Britain's health minister, Gillian Keegan, get some tough questions from this Sky TV reporter.
At this stage, how many people are in hospital this morning with Omicron?
There's 774.
In hospital?
Oh, sorry, that's total hospital, hospitalization in the last 7 days. With Omicron, there's 10 cases with Omicron. Maybe going up to 11, actually. That wasn't confirmed yet, but I think it's probably gone up to 11.
How many deaths?
The deaths were 100 and... Oh, I don't have the actual...
From
figure,
Omicron?
But, Omicron. Oh, sorry, Kay. No, we don't have... we've had one death with Omicron so far.
Just and how many of those 10 people with Omicron are on ventilators?
I don't think there's anybody that I'm aware of on a ventilator with Omicron.
Okay. Professor Whitty's saying people should be
prioritizing... So what you're getting at is the severity of the... You're getting at the severity of the disease,
which is
one of the unknowns.
10 people in hospital, one of them died, the other 10 are not on ventilators. There's a fact.
Yeah.
It's about time. Did you hear that pushback from that Sky TV reporter? It's about time. Folks, when you hear junk science out there, peel that onion back. So if you hear people say it's really getting bad, don't get combative. Just say, oh, really? How bad is that? Oh, really bad. Well, how many people are being admitted to the hospitals? How many people have died? And when they start him-hawing, just very respectfully, very calmly, just start asking them questions. Now, what you're using is the Socratic method of teaching. You teach by asking questions. And occasionally people wake up and realize the absurdity of the position they're taking. But right now, folks, before I move on, I just want to say one last thing. America, wake up. Smell the coffee. We got to wake up. And I've been doing that a lot in different guerrilla tweets I do. I go out to some big trending report on Twitter, and I'll strike. And then I'll get 200 likes. And if I stay there, I start to get throttled back. So then I pull back and I wait. But folks, we got to get this trash out of government and this bureaucracy, this health bureaucracy, and start living. But right now, we have to move on. It's time for the Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
Now, I think probably everybody's heard Biden's stern warning from the press release earlier in the week, the White House press release. I want to read it to you, okay? Here it is, and this is a quote, and I checked this. Ethan checked it at the plant. At first, Ethan showed it to me. I said, that can't be real. This is a direct quote on whitehouse.gov. It's on White House letterhead, and this is a quote, and I read, for the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death for yourselves, your families, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm.
Really?
Yes, Alvin. That's what our imposter in chief had the nerve to say about we the people. Now, this dark winter We've covered that, and it's been on here for a while. We talked about that last election, the dark winter. And, you know, if you're a regular listener, you know we've talked about crimson contagion and this whole engineered ploy. But that's what they're doing. They're moving us into this. And as we start to see these adverse reactions manifest on a global scale, and it's really literally now a pandemic of the vaxxed, we're going to be blamed for it. We truly are.
Gosh. Golly. Golly. Gosh.
That's right, Gomer. Golly. This is not about identity politics, folks. And this is not statesmanship. We are not seeing that from the imposter in chief. This is all about divide and conquer, not about unity and strength. It's about the Great Reset, not about keeping America great. Hey, folks, did you hear that CNN got busted this week? It reported the first Omicron death in the United States, a death in Texas. And then a reporter, first let me tell you what happened. CNN reported that this unvaccinated man from Texas became the first casualty of Omicron coronavirus variant in the United States. And then God bless this man. His name is, let me see my notes here. I can't remember his name. Let me call it up here. Oh, there it is. His name is Dan Cohen, and he's with the MPN News, and I don't know what that stands for. Oh, Mint Press News. So what Dan Cohen from Mint Press News did is he called the Harris County, Texas Public Health Department and investigated this claim from CNN. So I have a 52-second clip of Dan Cohen on the phone with the Harris County, Texas Public Health Department, and listen to the truth concerning this bogus lie from CNN. Now, the first part is CNN's lie. The second part is Dan Cohen's investigation. So just take a listen.
We've just confirmed the first death in the United States due to the Omicron variant in Texas.
On Monday, Texas reported the country's first known Omicron death, a man in his 50s who was not vaccinated.
So now listen to Dan Cohen's truth.
We cannot confirm that the patient died from COVID, but we can say that he was Omicron positive at the time of his death.
So he died with COVID, but you can't say that he died from COVID.
Correct. This information comes from our epidemiologists, who are the ones who get the reports. They have to do a very meticulous investigation because, you know, they do take this very much at heart. They're telling me that they cannot say that that COVID was the absolute cause of death.
What? What? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
That's right, Paul. There's some stinking thinking there. Folks, these jabs are not vaccines. They're calling COVID-19 injections a vaccine, and that's manipulation, folks. That's misrepresentation of a clinical treatment. It's not a vaccination. It does not stop infection, nor does it stop transmission. It's a means by which your body is programmed to genetically make a toxin so that your body will then try to make some sort of response to it to protect you. So, yes, Paul, this is crazy. This is stinking thinking. It's here, and it's here to stay unless we the people stand up and say no more. So what the bodies of all these vaxxed are doing now, they're out there. They're spike protein machines, and those bodies are trying to deal with this toxin. But get this. Unlike a real vaccine, which triggers what's known as an immune response, these jabs trigger the creations of the toxin itself. You know, this mRNA spike protein technology uses your cell's DNA structure to synthesize proteins that are supposed to resemble in some way, look like to your immune system, these spike proteins of the virus. And they use your ACE2 receptors, and that's why the ivermectin is so effective, because it blocks the ACE2 and ACE1 receptors so that these things can't start to cause the damage. Now, these proteins, they're identified by the immune system of the host, and then the immune system of the host tries to build antibodies against them. But get this,
to get this into your system, they had to shut down your immune system. So the real concern here is that these proteins could start to accumulate in the body, and regions of high ACE2 receptors are specific to certain parts of the body, like the gonads in men, and they're seeing reduced sperm counts on sperm donors. In fact, there's a premium being paid at sperm banks right now for the unvaxxed sperm. So if the immune system then attacks the location where these spike proteins accumulate, you're dealing with what's known as an autoimmune function, or dysfunction, I should say. And it's going to start to affect people's respiratory systems, their circulatory systems, their central nervous system, their reproductive systems. Folks, I'm telling you, this is serious stuff. So now, I need to tell you, or let you listen, to why we need a second life jacket. Take a listen, and this is why we do.
Excuse me, you can't come in unless you are fully life jacketed.
Oh, it's you again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you can see, I'm fully life jacketed, just like you told me to last time.
Nope, we changed the definition of what it means to be fully life jacketed. Now you have to have another life jacket on to be considered fully life jacketed.
What?
Yeah. We're requiring everyone to get a booster life jacket.
What's wrong with this one?
It's completely inadequate.
Well, a lot of people are already wearing a life jacket because you insisted on it, and now you're demanding that we wear another life jacket? That's crazy. Besides, I don't see any water around here.
Well, there's a new form of water going around now. Water vapor.
Oh, that's just the nature of water. It's how it behaves. Nothing to freak out about here.
But people are getting wet from it.
But they're not drowning from it.
That's irrelevant to us. Put another life jacket on or else you can't come in because you're unlife jacketed.
No, I already have a life jacket. I'm good.
Sir, you're putting yourself in grave danger of drowning. That life jacket you have on will not work unless you also put on another life jacket. And you're putting everyone else at risk of drowning too. His four life jackets he has on will not work unless the current life jacket you're wearing is accompanied by another life jacket.
This is sounding less and less scientific.
I represent the science of flotation.
Well, if this one's so useless, why'd I have to get it in the first place?
Because it works very effectively at protecting you from drowning.
Let me get this straight, what you want me to believe. You want me to think that life jackets work so well that it's essential that I wear one at all times to be protected from water.
That's correct.
And you also want me to think that they work so poorly that I need to get another one every 6 months?
That's correct. I'm glad you get it.
Sounds like you're making life jackets that just don't work very well.
I wouldn't say too much about that, or else we'll have your freedom of speech taken away.
Is there actual research showing your life jackets are effective and safe?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have data that proves that?
Of course. We have nothing to hide.
Can I see it?
Absolutely. We'll be happy to let you see it in 75 years.
75 years? Why so long?
Oh, it just takes a long time to compile all the data that we already have compiled. Oh, and to make copies of it? Have you ever used a photocopier? Those things break all the time. Just the whole process takes like 3/4 of a century.
Don't you have the files stored digitally?
Put on another life jacket now, or...
Or what?
Or I'll tell everyone you're an anti-life jacketer.
No, I like life jackets. I think they have their time and place. I think they should be a personal choice. I'm just against life jacket mandates.
So you are an anti-life jacketer.
No, I just...
Actually, we got the dictionary to change the definition of the word anti-life jacketer to include anyone who's against our mandates.
Whoa, you're changing language?
Yeah, the power of big life jacket. Pretty impressive, isn't it?
That's terrifying.
Do you know what else is terrifying? Water!
I'm not scared of water. It's just statistically, it's such a low risk.
And the new form of water. Even wetter than before.
Not scared of that either.
Put on another life jacket now!
I'm honestly not scared of water anymore. It's just something that mankind has lived with and will continue to live with, so I don't think it's something we need to stop living our lives in order to save our lives from. So, no thank you. I'm good.
You deserve to die.
What?
Science.
What's wrong with you?
Well, I guess you just want us to make your life more of a living hell by taking away more of your freedoms to protect you into being coerced into putting on another one of our life jackets.
Haven't you ever heard of the Nuremberg Code?
Never heard of it.
Well, it's an international law set up to protect people after the Nazi trials.
Not only will you not be allowed in public places if you're seen walking around like a moron not wearing multiple life jackets, but we'll restrict you from buying food, owning property, and seeing your family.
You keep me from seeing my family?
Mm-hmm. That's right. But Dr. Floaty says if you put on another life jacket to go with your first life jacket, then you can see them.
But he says you'll still need to wear an inner tube when you're around them.
What the hell? If I still have to wear an inner tube when I'm around them, why on earth would I put on another life jacket?
Aren't these things supposed to work?
I really have no idea what you're trying to ask.
You're a psychopath. It's like you're coercing me into putting on another life jacket by offering me protection against the abusive restrictions that you're putting on me. It's like that's the only thing that these protect me against.
Well, you'll need two on to be protected from them. And doesn't that sound like very valuable protection?
No!
Look, unless you want to be restricted from going into public places, buying food, owning property, and seeing your family for the rest of your life, then put on another life jacket.
No.
Yes.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it or you'll be sorry.
Okay, fine. Put the damn thing on just so my life can get back to normal.
Now can I go back to living my normal life?
Absolutely. Enjoy.
Thank you.
You should be good for another 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
Yeah, surprisingly, the CEO of Big Life Jacket just announced that a third life jacket will be necessary in 5 minutes. But this time, it'll really protect you.
No more.
You know, folks, in an age where comedy's been all but banned unless it's woke comedy, God bless this man because he's single-handedly keeping it alive. Praise the Lord. I think that was hilarious, fearless, honest, and truthful. And he got a word out that people are going to understand and maybe, provided the Lord's willing, they can see the absurdity of all this craziness. So, I mean, you want to hear some more absurdity? Did you hear what New York City did this week? They outlawed natural gas for heating and cooking in all new construction. And the planners are going crazy. They're saying, wait a minute. We don't have enough electrical infrastructure in terms of wiring to meet the electrical demands of heating and cooking with electricity. And how about Toyota this week? Their press release, I think, to the European Union, who plans on going to all electric cars, Toyota is issuing a grave warning that there's not enough wire capacity in the infrastructure to handle this. You have to do this gradually. But nobody thinks. They don't. Even this whole global warming thing and carbon credits, you know, we've played this on the show before. That goes back to the Rio summit. And, I just forgot the guy's name. He was an oil guy set up by the Rockefellers, Maurice Strong. So Maurice gave this as his legacy, and he wanted to protect the environment. The only thing that people realize is that Maurice had another agenda. The very oil companies were behind this. Now, what they did is they established the guidelines in which science would have to operate. So they had out-of-bound areas. And with regard to contributors to global warming, they couldn't look at anything natural. So they couldn't look at sunspot activity, solar cycles, volcanism, massive forest fires, or anything else naturally occurring. Could only look at man-made effects. So now if you take a chart of everything that contributes to global warming, and on the upright, or what's known as the y-axis, I'd like you to place the actual percent contribution. And then on the horizontal axis, or the x-axis, place the various contributors to that percentage of overall global warming. Well, in first place, you'd see the sun, followed by volcanism, followed by forest fires. And then there'd be this precipitous drop. I'm talking from 80s and 60s and 50s down to like single-digit contributions. There's water vapor. There's carbon monoxide. There's nitrogen. There's CO2. Oh, and by the way, even water vapor has more absorptivity or greenhouse effect on the temperature of the Earth than does CO2. So now, if you eliminate all those natural causes and only focus on the man-made causes, then you can see the differences between, say, a 1% and a 1.5% contributor. But you've got the sun over there contributing. Folks, that's not science. That's stinking thinking. Now, they've got other stupid happening, like Germany's going to eliminate all use of petrochemicals, as they call them, fossil fuels, which is another misnomer, because that's not where this came from. It's not a bunch of dinosaurs and all this stuff being crushed under tremendous pressure that makes petroleum. That's not how it's done. It's a deep earth process. The Russians are all over this. It's not an exhaustible supply. It's virtually an inexhaustible supply. It's not coming from fossils. It's not fossil fuel, folks. But that's a story for another day. Maybe we'll do that one. The lie of fossil fuel. But anyways, there's this process that they use known as the Haber process, and it's to make ammonia, which is needed to make fertilizer. So when the German came out with this, and as Germany goes, most of the EU goes, soon Europe's not going to be able to manufacture the fertilizer they need for agriculture. And then don't even get me started on the CO2 scrubbers out in the Midwest. They're actually literally taking the CO2 out of the air, folks. Now, right now, the CO2 level in the atmosphere is about 400 parts per million. And if you look at it over time, and you can do this by core drilling in the Arctic and the Antarctic, and you can look at the CO2 levels in the various levels of the ice, you can see that this is fairly low. And plants need this for the photosynthetic process, which is the basis for all life on Earth. They're literally terraforming the Earth. They're literally going to make it inhospitable. You know, it's going to be literally a dead planet if they continue to do this. But folks, I can go on and on about that. Maybe we'll do something in the future on that. Right now it's time for Ken's Corner.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
You know, Sister Kathy and I have been emailing a lot. She's a great sounding board, a source of a lot of the information on here. So if you're listening, Sister Kathy, Merry Christmas and God bless you. But this week she wrote me, and I'd like to read this to you. I lean toward everything being a lie. It's all scripted, except where we break free and get back to God and continually seek Him. It's horrific trying to keep your mind focused off of this freak world and onto God, but we must do it. And I replied, just listen to a Truth Stream video yesterday with Melissa and Aaron. Melissa was very good and asked her viewers to think of authority. What is authority, folks? Who's actually vesting authority in these talking heads? Who's actually vesting authority in these government officials? And how are we, the people, being manipulated by false authority? Well, Melissa did a very good monologue on that. And at the very end of it, she said, as you dig through your bag of authority, you get to the very bottom of that bag we'll call authority, you know what you see? You see a mirror staring right back at you. Folks, the source of all vested authority in any form of government is we, the people, even in unjust governments. You know, even an oppressive regime like Stalin or Mao Zedong or any of these people would have been stopped if we, the people, in mass, stood up and said no. Yet what they do is they use identity politics. They use divisive things to get the people into these little subgroups debating amongst themselves. Are you vaxxed? No, I'm not vaxxed. Are you vaxxed? You got to get vaxxed. Are you red or are you blue? Did you vote for Biden or did you vote for Trump?
Yet people don't talk about freedom and liberty, a democracy versus a republic, the difference between scientism and science. People don't wake up long enough to see that, yes, it is all scripted, even down to the dumbing of our children in our public or government schools. And don't even get me started on these churches, these mega churches. I've done an entire series on that, folks. The church has fallen derelict to its duty to be the consciousness of the state, you know, the good conscience of the state. And we've got Fauci out there saying, I'm science, you know. If you disagree with me, you disagree with science. What garbage. And how about Neil deGrasse Tyson? He's out there saying that we must obey scientists. You know what that reminds me of when I hear people saying stuff like that? It reminds me back in the days of the Inquisition when the Catholic Church said they are the source of all authority. They are the source of interpreting the Word of God. You can't read it. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson had the gall to say that you can't read and do your own research and understand it. You got to leave it to the experts. Well, that sounds like what the Catholic Church said to we the people. You can't read the Bible. You got to let our priests read it, and they'll tell you what it says. You know, the priests and the monks had their robes, and our scientists today, or our pseudoscientists, they have their lab coats. And instead of the lectern and the sermon at the pulpit in front of all the people, we have our TVs. We have our press conferences or our press. We have the experts, the talking heads get up there and tell us what to think. Well, folks, I'm telling you, you know what that is? That's mind control. I don't care whether you use the old term of religion in the sense of Roman Catholicism or whether you use the new concept of science or better called scientism. It's mind control in America, folks. So what I'd like to do right now, before we move on to Back to the Future, is play part three in the Mind Control in America. What do you want to call it? It's not really a series. It was just about a 45-minute audio done by Stephen Jacobson back in the 90s. This was one of my red pills. Cooper played this on one of his shows. Listen to this part. It's going to talk about how music is used to control us.
'60s rock superstar Jimi Hendrix said,
"You can hypnotize people with music, and when you get them at their weakest point, you can preach into their subconscious whatever you want to say."
The power of music has been recognized throughout history. Plato and Aristotle believed that people could be controlled by music. Music affects the emotions, the mind, and the body. Sound causes changes in body chemistry, blood pressure, breathing, and digestion. Fast music will speed up the nervous system, while slow music will slow it down. The entire body is sensitive to sound. Low tones will vibrate in the lower parts of the body, and high tones will vibrate in the higher portions and on into the head. Even sounds that cannot be heard affect you. Low-frequency infrasonic sounds affect the internal organs and can cause headaches, nausea, dizziness, and fatigue. Much of today's popular rock music is built around a heavy bass pattern louder than the melody. These loud, low-frequency vibrations and the driving beat of most rock music affect the pituitary gland. The pituitary gland produces hormones that control male and female sexual responses. These low-frequency vibrations vibrate in the lower parts of the body so that the music feels good. Though the message of some rock music is thoughtful and positive, the message of many rock videos and the music, particularly heavy metal, is a negative mental program that glorifies violence and deviant behavior. A visit to your local record store to check the lyrics on the back of the albums will reveal recurring themes preoccupied with violence, rape, sadomasochism, suicide, illicit sex, drug and alcohol abuse, fascination with the occult, and in some instances, race antagonism. Backward masking, where a message is spoken or sung that intentionally means something else when played backwards, has been used in some rock music since the Beatles first used the technique. The subconscious can decode and read messages spoken or sung backwards. When played backwards, the song Miss Me Blind by Culture Club repeats the message, be in sin when you're not, over and over again. First, listen to the music cut played forwards. Played backwards, the message is, be in sin when you're not. The use of backward masking may be far more extensive than anyone suspects. There are literally hundreds of examples and a disturbing proliferation of satanic messages. For example, from the album Raising Hell by Run DMC, listen to the music cut played forwards. Played backwards, the message is, Hail Satan. It is important to note that the lyrics of many rock songs are not clearly distinguishable consciously. When you do not hear the message clearly, you cannot make the conscious choice to accept or reject it. When you cannot make that choice, or when that choice is taken away from you, the message is programmed to your subconscious without your being aware of it. The repeating beat of the music is a distraction for the conscious mind to lock onto in order to stop conscious thinking, thus causing the hypnotic state of mind, a state of mind that is similar to daydreaming. Repetition of the message constitutes mental programming. In time, the effects of this kind of programming will appear. These effects can be physical, psychological, and emotional. No!
Folks, if you found that part about music, there's a two-part series out known as Hell's Bells and Hell's Bells 2. They dive into just how manipulating or manipulative music is. But, you know, if choice is taken away by blurring the lines or not being able to understand the lyrics or, quote-unquote, understand the science, you basically fall into Dr. Desmet's mass psychosis. There's a technical term he used, but that's what it is. And this music gets into mind entrainment. Remember we talked about that with the ohm, that slightly audible tone that people hear gets you into that beta wave state, or I should say theta wave state for high suggestibility. But right now, folks, we have to keep moving on, and it's time for Back to the Future, where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. And this week, folks, what we're going to do is we're going to go back. We're going back. I mean way back to 1400 BC. And we're going to go to this mount in Greece called Mount Parnassus. So we're on Mount Parnassus, and we see off in the distance a goat herder who noticed that his sheep started acting strangely after peering into this cavern. Curious, so he went over and investigated. And he found out firsthand as he felt agitated like one frantic. Now that's at least how the legend goes about the humble beginnings of what's known as the Oracle of Delphi. So there was apparently some sort of noxious emission coming from deep earth probably something to do with volcanism. Probably had some sulfur compounds and other noxious chemicals in there. And it was discovered by the locals that if you breathed that in, it created an altered state. You could begin to prophesy. Now, the effects on the brain were pathological in the sense that this was real. It was happening biochemically. But they started to attribute it to a divine source. And other people came and started and held the vapors. And they could prophesy and see visions and all this stuff. Now, what was actually happening is the gas was disorienting these people, and some even fell into the caverns. So they started to establish this tradition that they would suspend a young virgin over it, and she'd become the Oracle of Delphi, and she would give them wisdom. Now, let's wind the clock ahead to the 1950s, and good old Rand Corporation, and I've talked about the Rand Corporation. In fact, that's a topic for an entire message. But I don't know. We'll see where the Lord leads us on that, folks. So back in the 50s, the Rand Corporation developed what they referred to as the Delphi method or the Delphi technique. And it was used to forecast technology on warfare. Now, since then, it's been used in healthcare, education, management, environmental science. And if you read any of the normie information on this, it's going to sound like the most wonderful thing since chicken soup in the can. It truly is, or since sliced bread, or since Heinz came out with ketchup. But really, it's not. They even have a group out known as Expert Lens that allows people to get together anonymously with their identities veiled, answering questionnaires and receiving feedback. You know, group response and discussions are held, and then they can revise their answers. But it's all the same thing. So how does this apply to the freaky deaky news? Well, I'm going to ask you a question, folks. How doesn't it? You know, on past episodes of SDG, we've covered Saul Alinsky and Rules for Radicals. I've talked about the Clo and Piven strategy. I've been talking about that for probably 10 years, folks. And I've even mentioned the Delphi method. But these three specific things, Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, the Cloward Priven strategy out of Columbia University for the takedown of society by straining the very social safety network that's in there, you know, like the welfare program and the social security system and the healthcare system, and the Delphi method, which is basically the Hegelian dialectic, controlled opposition, problem, reaction, solution. But when you put these three topics together, they are basically the toolkit or the toolbox for the progressives and the neocons and how they deceive people and manipulate large groups of people who are totally oblivious to their methods. But I'm telling you, folks, once you understand this, you can see it being done on town hall meetings on TV, on the talk shows, on the Sunday morning Meet the Press, the roundtables they have. You know, they use this method. Now, the longtime listeners, you don't fall victim to this, but what you need to do is understand this and then start to share it with your friends. That's how we're going to wake up the masses known as we the people. They are being duped by the Delphi technique, Saul Alinsky's Rule for Radicals, and the Clover-Priven strategy. And the liberals and even some of the neocon rhinos, they're using it against us. And here's where it gets tragic, folks. Millions of Americans today are unfamiliar with these manipulations, these wiles of the devil, so to speak. And they are suspect and vulnerable to these techniques, this manipulation that's being used on them like the Pied Piper. They're being played for fools. They have become unknowing, unwillful parts to the destruction of America and our constitutional republic and the loss of all personal freedom by the Delphi technique. Now, this is really nothing than a modified version of the old communist re-education program. It was, like I said, developed by the Rand Corporation and then used by the U.S. Department of Defense as a weapon of war. Now, when Jimmy Carter became president, he created the horrible U.S. Department of Education, and then this technique was used to manipulate teachers to get on board. You know, back in the day, teachers were pretty cool. I remember some of my teachers, and then I remember the ones that were woke. I remember the ones that were trying to get me to embrace all the craziness. Yes, even back in the 70s, the advanced placement. I was in advanced placement for science, for English. You know, the advanced placement, man, you can get college credits for it. Sociology. I had a Marxist for my sociology teacher. I had a Marxist for my advanced placement English. Now, nothing like that was happening in the sciences at the time, so I didn't see it in my advanced placement chemistry or physics or calculus. I didn't see it in any of that. But I did see it in sociology, even civics, folks. Now, here's where it gets really crazy. Since the assault on education, it's been moved not only from the teachers, but now it's being used to manipulate the students and even the parents at PTA meetings. It's an extremely effective technique. Can work on any conceivable group of people. I don't care. Farmers, parents, doctors, lawyers, even football players. And I don't care what the topic is. You could be talking to those farmers about surrendering their water rights for the greater good. Or you could be talking to doctors about treatment on a patient until they can't breathe. Or maybe football players trying to convince them how important it is to take this death jab that's going to give them heart conditions for the good of the league, for the good of the NFL. Total BS, folks. So except for those few, the red pilled, that are onto this technique and understand what's happening, these people are being duped. So we have to get the truth of the Delphi method out there and how it's used to manipulate people by governments and non-governmental organizations, even the unions. They use it to achieve a predetermined outcome at some event or function. And that's what it is. And like I said, they primarily use the Hegelian dialectic, controlled opposition. So they control both sides of the argument, the thesis and the antithesis. And then they move the rock by that process known as synthesis. So in these group settings, the Delphi technique is an unethical method to achieve consensus on controversial topics by controlling the argument. So they have people sit around and they have what they call a facilitator, and these people have talking points and they advance the agenda. Now, the general public in these meetings have no idea this is happening. And I'm telling you, this Delphi method has been used by county, state, national government through this process they call visioning, and it's been very effective on the governmental level in the counties. Process has a predetermined outcome. Like I said, they have some policies they want the people to support. And they create this appearance of community, and they'll have the donuts out and the coffee and maybe even the guy to warm them up talking about the park they just put in or something, you know. And then they start with the programmed agenda, okay. And they're trying to say, we got the will of the people behind us. Look. And they use this visioning process, and it's been very successful. And they're using on these people that are ignorant to it. And they're using it to implement a lot of the UN Agenda 21 on a county level, to transform our cities, our towns, our townships into these quote-unquote sustainable communities. And they use what is known as a three-step process, visioning, and then converting the vision to a plan, and then implementing the plan through legislation. So county governments across the country are probably the most successful with this. And folks, I've seen it way back into the 90s. From clean and green to rails to trails to home rule charter. I even fought that here in the county. We had a massive organization. We actually went statewide, and we had a group called Stop Taxing Our Property. We had a march to Harrisburg. And then I saw them come in and start to try to take over our grassroots group using the Delphi method. And what they were trying to do is bring in home rule charter. And don't even get me started on the BOCA codes, you know, the building officials and code administration. They have a website, and we all have to follow their rules on how we build our house, down to how our toilet flushes. And soon, I'm predicting, folks, it's going to be those crap-sensing toilets that can read your poop and pee. And pardon for my vulgarity, but that's where this is going. So this technique's used to manipulate the gullible citizens into a false sense to move county government along. And if they take our counties, they take our states. And if they take our states, folks, they take our country. This Delphi method can be defeated, folks. And this is how you do it. You have got to educate a group of your neighbors, and you've got to go to these local meetings where they use this, and you've got to apply what I'm going to share with you next to disrupt it. Remember, this is an unethical, dishonest method that's used for mostly evil purposes, and it needs to be exposed by as many people as possible. Then we have got to go into these meetings where they're using it, and we've got to start to disrupt these meetings. And an easy way to do this, folks, and you do it very respectfully, you do not make a scene. Remember, this is passive opposition. This is peaceful noncompliance. So you make copies of this explanation, and if you email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com, I'll send you out a prepared document that all you have to do, folks, is pass it out to your friends and go to the meeting and understand what's happening, and then quietly participate in the process. And when the facilitator asks the group to break up into their smaller groups, raise your hand and say, excuse me, I have a question. Are we using the Delphi technique in this process? And I'm telling you, wait till you see the look on their face. I've done it before. It's precious, folks. It'll ruin the day for that facilitator. What you want to do is ask more questions, peel back that onion, and say, well, you're not familiar with the Delphi process? And then just go through the talking points that I'll provide for you, and I guarantee you that you'll turn the agenda around, you'll upend it, and they will not accomplish their mind control group consensus. Folks, we have to stand up. Our time is short. I don't know if we're going to be successful or not, but I'll tell you what. All good has to do for you is nothing, absolutely nothing. Now, last week, folks, we began to look into Isaiah 40, verses 28 through 31. And let's face it, we cannot deny that there's stress out there right now. Stress with your families for the gatherings we're having. Stress at work on whether or not you're going to be compliant to continue work. You know, do you have to wear a face mask at work? Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. But, you know, everybody's going after this a wrong way. Here's what I'm going to propose. Ask your employer if they could monitor the CO2 level between your mouth and your nose and your face mask. So put a CO2 sensor in there and ask them to monitor the CO2 levels. And guess what you'll see? You know, Del Bigtree did this on the high wire with his son. And you very quickly, within a minute or two, you get to CO2 levels that exceed the OSHA Code of Federal Regulation level of CO2 allowable in a safe workplace. And ask your employer how they're going to reconcile compliance with this OSHA regulation under CFR, I think it's Title 19, but don't quote me on that. I'll find it for next week. I'm going to find the CFR code on CO2 levels in the workplace. Ask your employer how they're going to be able to manage that compliance when they force you to wear a face mask. My point is, as you do these things, you experience stress. But we learned that God's plan is to give power to the weak and strength to the powerless. So praise the Lord, we don't have to be powerless. We don't have to be weak. So what I'd like to do is review very quickly what we learned last week on how to soar like an eagle in this war on truth. And then I want to move on to how to put it into application, so to speak. Now, last week we learned about this problem we all have in our lives known as stress. And let's face it, who doesn't, okay? Simply put, I said last week, that's the gap between the strength we have to meet the demands in life. And I called that the stress factor. And then we looked at three things that cause stress in our life. One's legitimate, overwork. And let's face it, who doesn't have to work hard to stay above water in this crazy, you know, hyperinflation world where half of everything you earn is robbed from you. Remember, the Bible told us that even Jesus got weary after he served others, and Jesus had stress. But there's other stress that doesn't come from work. Some of it comes from sin. And we looked at the story of Samson and Delilah, and the point that we got out of that whole thing was that sin will cause us to grow weary. Sin saps our physical strength. Sin saps our emotional strength, our moral and spiritual strength. And then it's all compounded by what the Bible calls the wiles of the devil, or giving a foothold to the devil. So once you're saying, okay, my protection that comes from the blood of the Lord has a breach in it, because I said, come on in. And then what happens is Satan just waits. He waits till you're tired. And then he attacks you spiritually. exactly as Professor Desmet described with mass formation. That's what it's called, mass formation. So I'm warning you folks, beware, because everyone, young and old alike, can experience this stress factor when we let sin in our life. And, you know, anything not done in faith is done in sin. So if you allow this fear to prey upon you, if you allow this fear to just destroy your ability to do anything, to even go see your mom, whatever, if you allow fear to function in you instead of faith, it's impossible to please God. And ipso facto, you're sinning, whether you know it or not. So beware of that, because good people and bad people alike, sinners and saints, young and old, the Bible says, even the youth shall faint and be weary. And then after that, we looked at God's promise to give you and me strength. You know, the Bible says in Isaiah 40, verse 31, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Remember, the Bible said shall, not maybe, not probably, not could, possibly. No, they shall, not may, they shall renew their strength. So wait upon the Lord and renew your strength. And then we looked at what it means to renew. That comes from the Hebrew word chaleth, which literally means they shall exchange their strength for the strength of the Lord Jesus Christ. And isn't that awesome? I'm looking at the time here, and I'm running out of time again, folks. So real quick, the Christian life isn't about some change life. It's about an exchange life. In other words, I surrender my strength, which is really weakness, for God's faith and God's strength. And I'm given the wisdom and power of God. You know, the weakness of God is stronger than men, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 25. And then in return for me doing that, God literally supernaturally infuses me with his strength. That's what I mean by it being an exchange and not a change. And then we looked at this concept of waiting upon the Lord. And there were four things we had to do. Do you remember what it means? It means to long for God. It means to listen for God. It means to look for God. And then ultimately, to live for God. And that's where I want to wrap this up. How we live for God. It means our lives need to be wrapped up in God, body, soul, and spirit. Everything is about Jesus. It's all about Jesus, folks. This is the reason for this season. This is the reason for us being here. All about Jesus. So let's look at how we can manage stress as we move forward, peacefully resisting tyranny, peacefully opposing the Delphi method, peacefully recognizing that we're being mind controlled. Now, there's three things, like I said, that cause the stress in our life, okay? And we can look at it a little different way. And we can look at those three things in a different perspective, but still the same three things: adversity, opportunity, and necessity. Now, when we fail in any of these three, literally, we have stress in our lives. Now, adversity, those that come to us unexpected, and they could be either good or bad. So you could be out there doing something good, like Jared was doing with that Let's Go Brandon call to the White House, to something maybe that come when you sin, that opened the door to Satan and said, come on in. And then opportunities. Those are the things that we desire to pursue that's going to help our family better, that maybe advances our education or our ability to care for our family. And then the necessity, you know, the day-to-day things. Now let's look at adversity to begin with. When adversity comes to us, sometimes it just hits you like a storm. Look at those people that got hit with those tornadoes. Now, God uses an analogy of an eagle in Isaiah 40, verse 31, where he says, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength and shall mount up with wings as eagles. Now, here's what an eagle does when it encounters a storm in its life. Okay? And remember, an eagle's no ordinary bird. These are big, kick-ass birds, folks. That's our national bird, you know, the bald eagle. These eagles actually look for storms. They long for the storm. They don't see a storm as a threat because they rise above it. So during a storm, what an eagle does is it rises higher and sees further and flies faster than it can in calm weather. Now, an eagle's normal flying speed is only about 50 miles an hour. But in these storms, an eagle can fly up to 100 miles an hour. Imagine that if you just turbocharged your car and you can get twice the top speed on it. So these eagles, they catch these stormy winds and they ride them. They rise above them. And that's the same thing we need to do when we face a storm in life. But if we're not waiting upon the Lord, and if we're not receiving his strength, we will not be elevated, folks. We will not rise above it. But God will help us rise above these storms in our lives. However, not only will God give us this elevation, but there's also an acceleration that he's going to give us as we dive into these opportunities. So not only are we going to face an adversity with this rising above it concept, riding the storm, so to speak, but then we're going to be able to dive into these opportunities. God says they shall run and not grow weary in verse 31 of Isaiah chapter 40. And these are the times when you need to move fast and meet deadlines. And who doesn't? I'm looking at the clock now. I got 4 minutes. Remember the story of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch over in Acts chapter 8, verse 30? The Bible says in verse 29 that the eunuch was in a chariot, and God said to Philip, go near and join thyself to this chariot. And then in verse 30, the Bible says, Philip ran. So he hustled. The time was short. The opportunity was right at that precise moment. He had to do it then, folks. There was no turning back. You know, the world behind him, the cross before him, he ran. So Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch got together because Philip was obedient. Now, had he delayed or had he argued with God, that opportunity would have passed by. Now, where is one of the most famous ancient churches of all time? It's in Ethiopia, and you know why? Because Philip was faithful, and then that Ethiopian eunuch took the gospel back to Ethiopia, and they preserved the Book of Enoch, which tells us about the fallen angels. So when you see an opportunity, and you don't have the strength to meet the opportunity, you better spend some time waiting on the Lord. And said, no one should attempt to do more than that which they can pray for. So when we wait upon the Lord and then face adversity, God gives us strength to soar. And when opportunity comes, he gives us the speed to dive into it, the strength to run. So if you don't need to rise or run, what then? Well, when the storm comes, you're going to have distress. But that's the way it has to be. And guess what, folks? God saved the best for last. Now, first, it may sound a bit anticlimactic what I'm going to share with you, but it isn't. So there's not only elevation, there's not only acceleration, but there's determination. God says we shall walk and not faint in verse 31 of Isaiah 40, and that applies to the necessities of life. Now, you know, most of life isn't soaring above adversity. It's not running or diving after an opportunity. It's simply dealing with the day-in, day-out necessities of life. Who can deny that? You know, the ho-hum. It's making breakfast, getting ready for work, dealing with rush hour, going to church, the daily grind. You know what I mean? It's serving God in the good days and the bad days, the hot days, the cold days, every day, every way you can, you know, day and night, week after week, walking with Jesus. You know, that's religion in shoe leather. And the more of us that, the majority of us that fell, we fell in the normal things, not the extraordinary things, not in the times of opportunity or adversity, no, in the day-to-day grind. But the strength of the Lord, when we apply these principles, will give us what we need to walk day by day with the Lord Jesus Christ, and they shall walk and not faint. Folks, I'm out of time in less than a minute here, and I still had some info to cover. But I just want to wrap it up and tell you that that's the way I choose to live, folks. I choose to wait upon God. And then the strength he gives me, I apply to serving God. And that basically means living for him. And that's why people in restaurants are called waiters and waitresses, because they serve us. Well, likewise, you can wait upon the Lord. So wait upon God. Serve him in all that you think, say, and do. And in a nutshell, that's how I live each and every moment of my day. And the Bible says they that wait upon the Lord are going to exchange their strength for his. And folks, honestly, that's what keeps me going. Folks, I love y'all. And I just want to wish you and your families a Merry Christmas. And I encourage you to wake up. Wake your friends up. Start this passive resistance. And remember, It's all about Jesus. Folks, I love you. Merry Christmas. We'll be back next week in 2022, provided the Lord's willing. I love you all.
Baby boy would one day walk on.